In the new horror film Antebellum, Janelle Monáe plays an enslaved woman on a plantation run by Confederate soldiers. She's desperate to escape.
But Monáe also plays a successful contemporary author and speaker with a beautiful family living a life of success and wealth. I'm Aisha Harris.
And I'm Linda Holmes. We're talking about Antebellum and how these roles fit together on this episode of Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. Here with me and Aisha from her home in Brooklyn is Soraya Nadia McDonald, culture critic for The Undefeated. Welcome back, Soraya.
Hello. Thanks for having me again.
Of course. And also with us is entertainment journalist and producer Joelle Monique. Hi, Joelle.
Hi, Linda. Thanks for having me back. I'm super excited to hear what this group has to say about this movie.
So, as I said, this is a horror film. It's the feature-length directorial debut of writer-directors Gerard Bush and Christopher Renz. Because it deals with her in these two different roles, it's hard to talk about without spoiling kind of how those things fit together. So we're going to talk without real spoilers beyond maybe the trailer for the first section. And then we will give you lots of warning that we are going to shift into a more spoilery territory. So do not worry, you will get plenty of opportunity to decide for yourself how much you want to be spoiled. So Aisha, I want to start with you. You were really curious about this movie. What did you think?
Well, this movie comes at an interesting time. Obviously, Get Out is a movie that a lot of filmmakers and creators have referenced and really enjoyed over the last few years. And since then, we've seen movies and shows like Lovecraft Country, and we're going to also get a Candyman remake soon. So there's this hunger and appetite for horror and the way in which we can interpret Black life and Black experiences through horror. And that's why I was so interested in this film. And unfortunately, it really, really, really let me down, in part because with stories like these, especially if you're going to be talking about slavery and the horrors of slavery, there needs to be some sort of like connection to the characters. And what I really feel is lacking here was interiority of any kind of any of these characters, especially Janelle Monáe's character. We never really get a sense of, you know, who she is beyond this author and speaker who gives a talk at one point at a conference and talks in like these very vague platitudes about the patriarchy and being empowered and how the white supremacy does not want Black excellence to win. And it all just feels very much like a TED talk in the worst possible way. And it's supposed to make us feel some sort of affinity for her character. But in the end, it just feels like emptiness. There's also a lot of scenes where it's clear that the filmmakers are trying to evoke a sense of like pride and just like excitement, especially towards the end where Janelle Monáe's character, who is now a slave, torches some Confederate soldiers and walks away. You see this in the trailer. She walks away with like her arm raised with the torch and the building is ablaze. And what am I supposed to get out of this? I don't know. Yeah, I just felt it's a lot of symbolism with little meaning behind it.
Yeah. Soraya, what'd you think?
Oh, man. Can I just copy and paste what Aisha said? So I had an opportunity to speak with the filmmakers. And the first thing that they mentioned is that they insisted on using the lenses that were used to shoot Gone with the Wind to shoot this movie.
What? Why? Do they have like a goal, a hope with that?
You know, again, I think it basically sort of ends up becoming more empty symbolism because aside from that sort of really extensive tracking shot that takes place in the opening, shout out to that poor Steadicam operator, because apparently they were shooting in like high summer in Louisiana and that man almost fainted. I wish this was a better movie, like considering the effort that he put forth for that shot. There's nothing in the movie that really tells us that they're thinking that it's in conversation with Gone with the Wind, aside from the fact that both are about slavery. That's not really enough. The other thing that I learned was that the idea for this basically came from a nightmare that one of the filmmakers had. And then they were like, let's turn this into a short story. And then that quickly got optioned into a film. But there doesn't seem to have been a rigorous enough development process.
Mm-hmm. So let me throw over to Joelle to get your thoughts. What did you think of this film?
Ooh, what a hot mess, Linda. I don't understand the structure of it. The first 8 minutes is just unrelenting torture porn for reasons that I cannot understand. Why have you dropped me into a plantation filled with violence and given me no human character out of anybody? Like, listen, plantations, awful places, but still run by human beings, people with like dreams and desires and goals. And all you have is like, we hate black people. And I don't have time for it. It is exhausting to watch. It is unfulfilling. It is not informing me of anything I didn't know. And I don't think it's like reaching its targeted audience. I feel like perhaps I was its targeted audience, certainly didn't reach me. I think there could have been great lessons for people who really hold the Confederate flag in high esteem. And it certainly is not going to reach them. It's a mess.
It's interesting. You know, I feel like if you are going to show that kind of unrelenting brutality, you got to have a reason. If you don't have a reason, it really seems gratuitous and unnecessary. And I think, to me, it feels like a movie where pieces of it are in place, but most of it is missing. Mm-hmm. It feels like you've got sort of several sections of it, each of which should be 5 minutes and is 35 minutes. And then most of what should have been the rest of the movie is not there. Because I do think the terror of all of this made perfect sense to me. That part of it reached me. I love Janelle. I love Janelle Monáe. I love her as an actress and a charismatic person. And I think, you know, some of the ideas of who she was in these two different stories, yes, of course, that's a very elemental and relatable kind of terror. But at the same time, I felt like they hadn't filled in what I wanted to hear. And this is probably a good spot. We're going to pivot a little bit. So if you haven't seen the movie and you don't want to know kind of spoilers, quote unquote, about what's really going on here, tune out now. Come back later after you've had a chance to see it because we're going to spoil it. Are you ready? Okay. I will just start by saying about 15 or 20 minutes into this movie, I texted our producer, Jessica Reedy, and I said, I think it's an amusement park. And as it turns out, basically, it's an amusement park. And so what you have is you have this whole section at the beginning where you see this plantation that's incredibly brutal with these incredibly brutal Confederate soldiers, quote unquote. And then you move suddenly to the contemporary story of Janelle Monáe as Veronica, this contemporary writer. And it turns out that that's a flashback because at the end of that section, she's kidnapped. And that's how she winds up at this amusement park. And then you kind of go through how she completes her escape. To me, what they skipped was the part of it that I would have found the most interesting. And this is what I mean when I say some of the movie seems to be missing. Like, I was very curious about, you know, what happened when she woke up in this place and they suddenly said, well, this is how you are going to live now. What was that like? How did they persuade her she had to do that? How long have they been doing this? Where did all these people come from and where do their families think they are? How are they managing to do this as a subpart of what seems to be a very public kind of Civil War reenactment situation? I just thought it was very weird. Joelle, you're nodding.
Listen, okay, so many questions. I love a time travel movie, and that's what I thought I was walking into. So I was a little, my sci-fi bias was high, and I was like, cool, so this cell phone ringing is like bringing her back. And then I was like, how are cell phones working in the past? And that's when it clicked for me. It's like when we first saw the cell phone, I was like, oh, we're in modern times. But this idea that you could not only hold these people at a park, not only that we're not going to see like the mental torture aspect of slavery, this idea of constantly being conformed to the, like, it almost treats slaves as though they're not people, like, oh, these are slaves now, as opposed to these are people who have been enslaved, which is a very different concept, which was highly frustrating. But most importantly, Black academia is small, as we saw at the convention portion. Like, we know each other. We can spot each other from miles away. Like, how are we going to capture, like, the smartest Black people as a form of, like, shutting them up? And then they're not going to, A, know each other, B, know this area. That's a very famous space in Louisiana. We know which plantation that is. Like, it is inconceivable to me that these people wouldn't, A, know each other or have known from our own history how to communicate with each other. There is a huge lack of, like, how did we survive during these times? And in modern times, how would we have used those lessons to survive? And that was agonizing.
it makes me think of when Kanye said slavery is a choice. It feels like this movie is sort of espousing that, because like you both just said, there's no understanding of like how they are, quote unquote, letting this happen. Like, to me, my sense is that this like theme park or this like Civil War reenactment park is holding them up. Like, people will go and see and they think they're just like also actors. But then like somehow the white people at the park have gotten them to stay. But why? Presumably, like, it's obviously torture. Things are happening. But it just feels so gross when you think about it in that capacity, because that to me is sort of what this movie seems to be getting at, is that like even today, like Joelle said, knowing everything we know about the ways in which enslaved people rebelled back in the day, like it just boggles my mind. And it really, the thing about it is that like in an interview with Screen Rant, the screenwriter Gerard Bush, who is Black, his quote was very telling. He said that like basically their first priority was to entertain. And I think that is absolutely what they were going for, is entertainment and the actual thought process that goes into what you're trying to convey is lost in that. I think what made Get Out so successful and work so well is that it wasn't using the characters as like this vessel with which to like project all of these issues around Blackness and whiteness and racism. These characters felt real. Everything else was like icing on the cake. And here, it's just icing. And it's gross. It's really gross icing.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think, Sarah?
Yes. So this was incredibly frustrating. This idea that there are just sort of like set pieces moving around in this motion picture dollhouse that hasn't been thoroughly framed out. Like, the thing that really bothered me, I think, more than anything else, aside from watching this woman be murdered in, like, you know, the first few minutes of the film, the screenwriters basically took all of these horrors, like real life horrors of American history, and then we're like, we're just going to sort of like remix them to our own ends without really thinking about any of the motivations behind them or just how people exist in their cruelty. I mean, I think that's actually one of the things that 12 Years a Slave did really well. Whereas with Antebellum, there's just sort of this rabidness and that's it.
Yeah.
And I think the place where that lack of deeper thinking about any of this really fails the viewer is with Kiersey Clemons's character. One, because she's pregnant. I'm not sure if they ever specify, like, if this pregnancy is one that happened, like, before she was kidnapped, or one that took place on this plantation as a result of rape. You have yet another sort of gratuitous scene where, you know, her character is basically sort of appealing to the perceived kindness of this soldier who has been sent to rape her. And that just ends up sort of drawing out more cruelty. And then, you know, the arc of her character basically is like all of these horrible things happen to her. She's pregnant and then she kills herself. She hangs herself. And it feels like the decision to have her hang herself is really just so we can have this image of a Black person in a noose. So you can yet again say, look how terrible this was.
Yeah.
But it's not necessarily like connected or rooted to anything story-wise. And because these images are so disturbing, and the fact that they are being pulled from history, from real things that happen to real people, it feels especially exploitive.
Yeah.
Like watching this film, everyone has a different way of sort of processing whatever kind of ancestral trauma that they are carrying with them. I can't say that I really sort of could deeply understand or connect with this.
Yeah. And I do think too, I also don't think it's effective as horror anyway. The documentary Horror Noir talks so much about the history of Black horror and Black horror creators. And very often it has had to do with trying to excavate, not necessarily slavery, but history of trauma. But for me, what made Get Out so effective was that it had that underlying sense of like, something's wrong, something's wrong, something's wrong. And that's what I think of as great horror, is that feeling that like dread grows gradually. That to me is what makes good horror effective. Mm-hmm. And here you're slapped in the face with such misery and violence at the very beginning that there's sort of no place for the idea of horror to go. And I think that's part of why I thought that a lot of the movie seemed to be missing. Yeah, it's an odd one.
It's wild to me how everything is disconnected from the central point. Like, even if we look at like the order things are told to us, because when you do a flashback, there's automatically, my brain goes to comparisons. What are we comparing about our current living situations to what our ancestors survived? And at points almost seems to be saying like, we're not out, like we're still entirely enslaved, which is such a ridiculous A, statement to make, B, poorly made in that everyone is overtly racist, as opposed to a lot of times I feel like for a lot of people, most of the racism we like interact with is done very subtly, oftentimes even unbeknownst to the person who's like causing the racist action, right? It's just, it's so ingrained in the culture and in the community. It very much feels like a Northerner's implication of the South, like their idea of what the South must be like for Black people. Like they've never been there and they're like, oh, all white people in the South must just be horribly racist and it must be awful just to have to exist down there, which is, again, a horrible like notion to spread. The South is lovely. There's a lot of beautiful communities down there. It's not that caricature. And to Linda's earlier point about the lack of horror, listen, when that little girl brought in that lynched baby doll, I laughed. Like, I cackled out loud. I love a scary Victorian child. And they blew it. I was like, is it a ghost? What's happening? And I'm like, no, that's just a girl dragging a doll. It's weird.
Yeah. Even after I understood everything that was happening, I still can't explain why that kid was there. Well, you can find Antebellum on demand. You can find it streaming. I will be very curious to hear what you think. Find us at facebook.com/PCHH or on Twitter at PCHH. When we come back, it's going to be time for our favorite segment, What's Making Us Happy This Week. So come right back.
On Facebook, there are these three brothers who love guns. Say guns are overregulated. Say the NRA is too quick to compromise.
And they're gaining more followers every day.
They're very in-your-face and offensive, and by God, I love them for it.
Listen now to the No Compromise podcast from NPR.
Welcome back to Pop Culture Happy Hour. It's time for our favorite segment of this week and every week, What's Making Us Happy This Week. Aisha Harris, what is making you happy this week?
In this cold, cruel world that we are currently living in and have no end in sight of leaving, I am very, very happy to have seen on Twitter that Dave Grohl, formerly of Nirvana and the Foo Fighters, wrote a really, really adorable song for Nandi Bushel, a British girl who basically is an amazing drummer, musician, and they had like a drum off a few weeks ago, and apparently, you know, Dave Grohl conceded that he had lost the drum off, and he wrote a song for Nandi with his daughters, and it's really, really cute. It warms my heart. I highly recommend everyone check it out. In fact, we can throw to it and listen to a bit of it now here.
All right. So that is Dave Grohl writing for Nandi Bushel. Thank you very much, Aisha Harris. Soraya McDonald, what is making you happy this week?
What's making me happy this week is the announcement of the shortlist for the Man Booker Prize, which includes like two of my favorite books of the past year or so, one being Real Life by Brandon Taylor and the other being The Shadow King by Maza Mengistu. I write a book recommendation list every fall, and both of these made my list last year. And so just to see them being honored and recognized for their incredible work makes me so happy, especially considering like just the historic, overwhelming whiteness of the Man Booker Prize. I'm very pleased to see them sort of expanding their literary palette.
Wonderful. Thank you very much, Soraya McDonald. Joelle Monique, what is making you happy this week?
I have watched Strange Case, which is the latest episode of Lovecraft Country, maybe 6 times, and I'll probably watch it a 7th. It's got body horror. It depicts fat black women living in a white man's world. And it was directed by Cheryl Dunier, who did The Watermelon Women. I am obsessed with this particular episode. The whole series has been really great for me. I know it's hitting people differently, but specifically this episode, to watch the character Ruby be able to confront some of her personal demons in such a cathartic and direct and creepy way has been so soul satisfying, particularly as I look around at the state of my country. It's wonderful and I can't recommend it enough.
Yeah, it is intense, but that is a heck of an episode. Thank you very much, Joelle Monique. What is making me happy this week? Sometimes you just have to admit that you are way behind the curve, but you are happy to finally be catching up. I have been listening this week to the audiobook of the delightful romance Red, White, and Royal Blue, Yay. Which is a romance between the son of the first woman American president and the Prince of England. So it's basically got international intrigue. It's got a young queer narrative. It's very sexy. It's more like steamy than I knew it was when I started listening to it. But it's really good. It's by Casey McQuiston, and it has like tremendously good like banter dialogue, which is like my favorite thing. It has lots of like emails back and forth as people are falling in love. I just think it's super awesome. I'm not quite done with it yet, and I am eager to get back to it because it is an absolute delight. Again, it's Red, White, and Royal Blue by Casey McQuiston. I recommend the audio if you love an audiobook, but also just the regular book, I'm sure, is a delight as well. So that is what is making me happy this week. That brings us to the end of our show. You can find all of us on Twitter. You can find me at Linda Holmes. You can find Aisha at Crafting My Style. You can find Soraya at Soraya McDonald and Joelle at Joelle Monique. Easy ones this week. You can find our producer, Jessica Reedy, at Jessica_Reedy, and our producer, Mike Katziff, at Mike Katziff, KATZIF. Mike's band, Hello Come In, provides the music you are bobbing your head to right now. Thanks to all of you for talking about this movie with me.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks.
It's so nice to see you guys.
And thanks for listening to Pop Culture Happy Hour from NPR. If you have a second, subscribe to our newsletter. It's at npr.org/popculturenewsletter. We will see you all back here next week when we will be talking about this year's Emmy Awards.